deal to fix budget top lines for the rest of this fiscal year and all of next fiscal year would bring some certainty to agencies across government, and that may translate into some stability in the contracting community. Paul Christman is Public Sector Vice President at Dell and my guest today on Industry Chatter. Paul, it is great to see you again. Thanks for coming back.
Good to see you, Francis. Well, thanks for having me.
You are just back from the big confab in Austin, Dell World. Tell me what you learned down there that applies specifically to your space that, dealing with the public sector.
So Dell World was actually really exciting this year because Dell Software, the group that I work in, is actually equally represented. So it was a sort of a two-for-one deal for folks who came down. And we had a pretty strong software users forum in conjunction with Dell World. And from that perspective, I think that was the most exciting thing to see is how far the company has actually transformed. And we still talk a lot about hardware. We still talk a lot about laptops and desktops. And we also talk about monitors. We talk about networking. We talk about storage. We talk about services. And we're starting to talk about the entire set of solutions for customers. I think that's the thing that is probably going to drive us for the next couple of years.
You, the acquisition of your company, your former company, by Dell, people looked at that as an effort to compete with HP and IBM to provide a full menu of services and goods to customers all across the enterprise, not just federal government. How is that being received in the customer community? Are customers getting that that was the point of this and getting that as you and your colleagues in the software side become integrated into Dell as an enterprise, that that's what they're going to be able to do?
Yeah, that happened about 14 months ago, and the company I was with, Quest Software, sort of the foundation of the software group, the Dell Software Group. I can tell you, integrating acquisitions is a challenge, and I think back, and it's been, as I said, 14 months. That's been a blink of an eye. We spent an awful lot of time working on the integration of the back-end systems, and also working very hard not to disrupt the front-facing customer relationships, both at the Dell side, the Dell account side, as well as the software specialist side. That's been a challenge. I'm really, really pleased to say that we've spent also the last 14 months trying to rationalize and integrate some of the software products, and you're starting to see some of those products actually reach the market.
Mm-hmm.
So you're starting to see connections between disparate parts of the software group, and you're starting to see connections back into other parts of Dell's other solutions offerings. So, for example, our identity and access management products that we've been selling as part of Quest prior to the acquisition are now integrating in with the SonicWall firewall products or the case endpoint management tools, and they're being wrapped together with some of the SecureWorks consulting to really get after some of the more challenging cybersecurity issues in the public sector. And I think we're starting to bear fruit on that. It's challenging work. These are large systems, and they're complicated, and we want to make sure that they're enterprise ready. And that's really what's been happening since the acquisition.
What are the customers that you talk to in the federal space asking you the most about right now? And is that different, and if so, how, from your state and local government customers and then from your other public sector customers?
The Fed customers are consumed by the challenges, and you just mentioned it in the introduction, consumed by the challenges of the federal budgeting process. And that's probably what differentiates the ability for them to plan and execute on their IT strategies, different from my state and local customers or my higher education customers, my education customers. The uncertainty around the budget, and knock wood, today's activities are going to make that a little less uncertain. Everyone's concerned about cybersecurity. They may not call it cybersecurity, but I was sitting with some university CIOs on Tuesday this week, and they're all talking about security. They're talking about cloud. They're talking about mobility. They're talking about BYOD. Again, all of the same big drivers we see in the federal space, slightly different standards. I was talking to them about FICAM, and the education people looked at me like I was strange. So I was trying to advocate some cross-pollination, some ideas between the feds and, in this case, higher education customers. But they're all driving to reduce costs while offer better services and deal with things like mobility, cloud, and big data, and cybersecurity underneath it all. It's common across all the markets.
Yeah, those themes are the big ones that we hear about more than anything else right about now. Are the demands, are the needs of your customers changing, or are they staying the same too?
I think they're changing, and this is the exciting part about what's happening now with DHS and the CDM solicitation that they ordered for continuous monitoring. The idea of transforming security away from this reactive, protect the perimeter sort of idea into this proactive, predictive security posture, I think it's been in the works for a little while. I'm excited to see that coming out. That's a big change for us as a technology provider, but I think it's also just a change in mindset from the CISOs and the cybersecurity folks.
That's been really hard for some agencies to wrap their arms around, that we are not going to try to only triage problems anymore, that we're going to try to be proactive, get ahead of the curve.
A lot of them are very excited about getting out of the react mode, because react mode means you're always playing defense. Mm-hmm. It's no fun to just play one side of the ball. It's a lot more interesting for people who are trying to creatively solve problems to try and use the information that they have at their disposal in different ways. And we're talking about connected security or continuous monitoring. Those sorts of ideas are really sparking some innovative approaches. And I think they're also creating some substantial challenges for the policymakers and the privacy considerations of both citizens and also government employees. When you start to aggregate all this information in the name of security, all of a sudden the rules of how we deal with information and the expectation of privacy that we have, we need to ask a few more questions before we put some of these things in play.
Well, it's been an interesting dynamic, Paul, because I think that the agencies have gotten a better handle on collecting and collating the information. And I'm not just talking about the intelligence agencies. And I don't mean specifically necessarily just about people, just stuff. They're getting really good at aggregating it, and they're starting to get better at collating it, and they've gotten ahead of the policymakers again. We've seen this many times in technology. As you say, they've gotten ahead of the technology, the policymakers, as far as what are kind of the rules of the game. We can do more than we expected to be able to do at this point, and now we need somebody to give us some guidance as to how we're supposed to go about doing it.
And I think you're right on. It's an idea that says these silos of information collection are going to be connected, if not, you know, outright tipped over and broken down. That allows us to think about, okay, who has access to my email, for instance, because email is one of the most ubiquitous means of communication. Well, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, all of these other social media sources, is it right for my employer, in the name of security, to be able to monitor my activities just in order to predict maybe something I haven't even done yet?
Mm-hmm.
And we're not getting to Tom Cruise Minority Report predictive analytics yet, but it's not so far into the future where we wouldn't be able to collect and cross-reference some very, very large data sets and draw some conclusions that people might not be too fond of.
The ability to do all of that is problematic's the wrong word, but I'm trying to think of a good word to describe the policy implications, because as privacy advocates have gotten all up in arms, and you can understand why, you can also understand the arguments that the people who are collecting this information can make, who at least behind closed doors are able to demonstrate to Congress, hey, we have really good reasons why we collect this stuff, and here are some examples of how this has paid off for us, the ability to do this.
I think we can start with some populations of users, for instance, or employees within the public sector space that have already accepted they're going to need some extra scrutiny. Privileged account management is another really hot topic, and it starts with the assumption that you've been granted extra special access into information systems for whatever reason in the function of your job. Those people, by definition, have signed up for it. And I think we can start there and maybe expand out. And we are seeing a lot of interest in privilege account management, audit and compliance around these super users. What are these folks doing? What activities are they performing? And they sort of sign up as part of the job. When we expand beyond that, that's when I think we get to these things that they make you stop and pause for a second.
I want to shift gears when we come back from the break, Paul. We talked, we touched on mobility briefly, and we talked about it quite a bit when you were here the last time. And I want to get your sense of where we are, kind of the state of the art of mobility right now, and not just in the technology, but in the mindset surrounding it. We'll do that when we come back. My guest is Paul Christman on Industry Chatter today. He's Public Sector Vice President at Dell, and we'll be back in a minute on In Depth with Francis Rose. Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Paul Christman's my guest on Industry Chatter today, Public Sector Vice President for Dell. And we talked during the break and before we went on the air about mobility and some of our personal preferences in phones. And it occurs to me as we talk about the phones that we like and what we've used and all of that kind of stuff. And you took me back, by the way, a little too far back to my Motorola StarTAC
days. Your flip phone, and when you closed it, you knew it was hung up and you didn't have to worry about, you know, pocket dialing people.
Well, remind me to tell you sometime about the story from my music radio career in 1986 when I lost $1,000 cell phone in a briefcase.
The bag phones,
yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yes. What a nightmare. Anyway, it occurs to me that we spend a lot of time when we talk about mobility talking about the form factors and talking about the stuff, the products, and not as much time talking about the capability, what somebody wants to be able to do. Is that something that's just me, or is that what you see and hear when you go around to customers?
You hit it right on the head. I don't think that we're going to talk much about the operating system or the hardware device or the amount of megabytes or gigabytes of memory in the device. It's about the information you can deliver. It's about the app plus the information. So I think that that's really going to be the differentiator. The diversity of form factors that we can get in a mobile device these days is pretty astounding. We can go from a very, very inexpensive quasi-smartphone, Android-based for $100, all the way up through mini tablets to large-scale tablets to all-in-ones to Chromebooks to laptops. All of these things are technically mobile, but the form factors that we've got are really fragmenting. I think what we're going to see over the next 2 or 3 years, especially at Dell, is fewer choices per se, but we're going to see more segmentation. So you'll say, "Oh, I'm a low end casual user. A Chromebook or a tablet with a detachable keyboard might be sufficient." And people are going to sort of self-select into those. It's not going to be this one size fits all. Everybody needs a laptop, and that laptop's going to be running the latest version of Windows.
Yeah, it's interesting because it sounds like the strategy is, and it's not just a Dell. I'm hearing this other places, is fewer SKUs, but the ability to do more things.
Yes,
and that focus on the end user or on the end use is maybe not the kind of strategy that I've heard, especially in the government space over the last couple of years. We want to be able to use a certain device on our network, not we want to be able to give this cohort of people the ability to do this thing, and we'll find whatever device is available to do it.
And I think the idea of BYOD, of bring your own device, plus the cloud, and the cloud is fairly device agnostic when you think about what's at the end of the wire to receive the information in the cloud. Those two things are really transforming the way IT thinks of these things. I talk about the perimeter basically has been blown up. The perimeter that we use to protect from a security perspective, it was really driven by we own the network, we own the devices, we can lock down, we can re-image, we can reach out and touch these things. None of those rules apply anymore because of mobility, because of BYOD, and also because of cloud in the back end. Most of those old paradigms of how we protect this stuff just doesn't work anymore.
Mm-hmm. And that protection issue, as we talked about in the first segment, is job one for everybody in the IT community in the federal government. That's what I hear more of than anything else, and that's what you hear more of too.
And as we collect more information, and we talked about a little bit earlier, the idea of big data, as we collect more information, the idea of protecting it, but also making it useful, the flip side of big data is, if you collect all this data but lock it down so much nobody can use it, there's no value. I think that the challenge for big data is appropriate usage And when you start talking about aggregating data from different places, the security model needs to take that into account. I spent a lot of time these days talking about what happens if you put this data and that data together. Well, the rules, for instance, around healthcare data or personally patient identifiable information, that is very, very problematic when you start to cross-reference and aggregate data. We really do need to look at this big data idea in a different light from a security perspective.
I think we're past the point where people believe that you can secure 100% of the data 100% of the time. That was a goal for a long time in government.
You can, but it's too darn expensive.
Yes,
you spend all your time just securing it.
You can do it, but you can't afford it anymore.
Yes.
I think we're past that. So we're now in a risk management environment when it comes to data. Are we any closer than we have been to automating the risk management so that that's not something that somebody has to have their fingers on all the time?
Yes and no. It still requires an awful lot of wetware with the software, the wetware being human beings to look at this stuff and ask the right questions. We spend an awful lot of time with consulting services to do these risk assessments. And once you have the conversation, then you can use the tools. The brute force work, for instance, data classification, that is becoming easier to do with automated tools. But you really do have to start with human beings deciding policy, procedure, what is this data set, what rules apply to it, what known rules apply, what policies we want to apply to it. And that starts with human beings having conversations. And then the technology gets an awful lot better at doing the brute force work.
It sounds like then once we get past that initial step, it requires ongoing visitation, but not constant monitoring and hands-on.
No, you can put tools in place to do two things. One is to establish what classification should be done on data as it's being created. The other thing that a lot of federal customers are most concerned about is, okay, so what about all the data that I already have? Mm-hmm. Who's going to go look at the backlog and who's going to go look at the storage? And that's the other part of it. I remember working on an application a long time ago. This was a couple of companies ago that they were looking at digitizing land records so people could go look at these things. And I said, well, what about all the old stuff? They said, yeah, we're going back to the 1800s. And they were going back and they were scanning all of these documents. They certainly weren't in any sort of machine-readable format.
Sure.
But it was a huge undertaking. They said, but if we don't go back and do the old stuff, the new stuff really doesn't matter because land records, it's all about continuity mm-hmm. of the property rights. And to some extent, if you start and implement an information categorization or classification process, you do need to go back to the old stuff.
Mm-hmm. That is an area, though, where a lot of federal customers are finding their stuff is not unmanageable, but really difficult to manage. I mean, I can only imagine that what that project was like that you just talked about.
It was reasonable. The project I'm talking about was reasonable because it was very narrowly defined. It was mm-hmm. one single data set. It was mm-hmm. it was just one information stream. We're developing tools that will actually go through the network, and the most problematic data is the unstructured data, the stuff that's in some file server someplace, and nobody has any idea who made it, when it was made, what's in it.
Mm-hmm.
We're developing and producing tools now that will actually go through the network and look at this unstructured data and start to classify it after the fact. So it doesn't rely on users to classify the data as it's created. We go back and look at it. And it gives reasonable suggestions based on the information it discovers on how it should be classified and categorized
mm-hmm.
Based on some base rules. And then it learns, and then you can teach it, and then it gets better. And it really does save the heavy lifting on the old stuff.
What do you see on the horizon in any of the things that we've talked about? But I'm particularly interested in this data, lassoing, it sounds like you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see on the horizon that people want to do now and we can't quite do now, but is reasonable to foresee maybe in a year to 5 years that we'll be able to do?
I think I'll use an analogy. I think what people, especially in the federal space with regards to cybersecurity, they want to get to this ability to be one step ahead. The idea, and we've all gotten these phone calls, we all have credit cards, and we get a call from the credit card company that says, hey, geez, you just were in Idaho, weren't you? And of course not. No, it's predictive looking at your purchase history and identifying fraud. Maybe it hasn't happened yet, but maybe they want to be able to prevent it from happening in real time rather than going back and doing forensics on what happened. They're going to say, I can actually prevent something from happening. And that's what I think really they want to get to in the next couple of years, is this ability to say, without getting a lot of false positives and you know, unjustly accusing people, they want to get to the idea of being able to use all this information to better defend themselves.
Mm-hmm. How big of a piece is attribution in that?
A lot. And so when we look at roles and we look at the idea of attribute-based identities, and we're getting to some of the technical information, the idea of defining your security rights based on what you're doing and also who you are is a big change from where we've been in the past, where it used to be, okay, you have security rights that are assigned to you when you start your job, and it's very, very challenging to change those on the fly. Maybe your role has changed. Maybe you're working on a different project. Being able to adjust those rules and security rights in a flexible, fluid fashion is probably one of the more challenging things that people are undertaking right now.
So is there a name for this concept yet, or should I make up the name predictive security?
Yeah, I talk about being able to get away from this reactive into preemptive, predictive, stopping something before it happens. It's interesting. It's happening in small scales in certain places, but it's going to become more prevalent, more pervasive.
Predictive security, attribution, and identity management, the gold keys for the next couple of years.
I got to get a marketing guy to shorten that up a little bit.
Yeah,
I
got to
get a better tagline.
Well, I'm just the DJ, man. I'm not the marketing guy, but it's great to have you as always, Paul. Time always goes too quick when you're here.
Thanks, Francis. Enjoyed the time.
Paul Christman is Public Sector Vice President for Dell. You can hear my conversation with him archived later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.